Welcome to the podcast of Your Unique Brain, creatively connecting the bodies, minds, and hearts of those living with a traumatic brain injury. The topic today is traumatic brain injury, an orphan disease, the ability of the brain to change, and benefits of meditation. Today I have the pleasure of interviewing Dr. Peter van Houten. He's a graduate of the University of California, San Francisco Medical School. He's also the founder and of the award-winning Rural Community Medical Clinic in Northern California. He's a long-time meditator, a co-author of several books on the use of yoga for health problems, and lectures on the effects of relaxation and meditation on the brain and behavior. I met Dr. Peter van Houten at this clinic, the Sierra Family Medical Clinic in North San Juan, where everybody is calling him Dr. Peter, so that's what I'm going to say as well. I'm very excited that Dr. Peter is so kind to let me interview him, because I see him as an advocate for people living with a traumatic brain injury. He is really the first physician that validated my experience and believed me what I said about the reality of living with a traumatic brain injury, even though it's considered mild or moderate. And also, he's very passionate about the brain and has done many lectures and presentations on the brain. Would you agree? Hi, Peter.
It's actually one of my chief interests in medicine, because it is connected, you know, it connects brain and behavior.
Yeah.
And there's so many things that impact that.
Mm-hmm. And do you see a traumatic brain injury as an orphan disease?
Yes, I do. And part of this has grown out of the fact that I've come to see with my own observations on this that I will end up seeing someone who's had what would be normally be considered a mild or moderate traumatic brain injury, or TBI is what we often call it, where they've not necessarily lost consciousness, but they've afterwards had a dramatic change in their behavior and their health. And they've ended up being sort of overlooked by the medical system. It's a little different when someone's had a major brain injury with a skull fracture and has been involved in rehabilitation and gotten all the kinds of care we would want them to have. But for everyone like that, there's probably 5 or 10 people who've had milder brain injuries that are significantly impacting them now. And they end up being sort of ignored by the medical system. And basically, their symptoms get treated rather than trying to look at the underlying damage that is the cause of their symptoms and how to work with that as a more holistic approach.
Mm-hmm. Could you tell us what happens to the brain when it experiences trauma?
Well, typically what happens is someone receives some kind of blow to the head, or there's been a dramatic, what we call acceleration, deceleration injury, where the head's been moved very quickly, enough that the brain, which is about the consistency of firm tofu, it's not a hard, rigid structure, so it's more gelatinous, that when your skull gets struck by an object, or you've fallen and hit your head and the head is struck by what you've fallen on, or when the head has just moved very quickly in a start and stop motion, like someone who's had a very severe whiplash injury can end up having a traumatic brain injury, milder one, but can end up actually causing them traumatic brain injury kinds of problems afterwards. Literally what happens is there's damage to the surface of the brain, and remember, the gray matter of the brain, which is the covering of the brain, the actual thinking cells of the brain, the neurons that do all the work for us in terms of our ability to move and sense things and make decisions. That those are the brain cells that actually get impacted. You can actually consider it like a brain bruise, that's occurring where those cells actually become damaged and do not respond normally. In fact, depending on how the healing goes, a person may end up with a permanent deficit related to those cells that have been damaged.
Could you also explain why we can't think when we are emotional? A lot of people that experience trauma get easily triggered again, and then they kind of spiral down and feel overwhelmed often, and they get into being really emotional and they can't think anymore and make decisions.
You know, one of the common things we see in people who've had head injuries is very often it interrupts the normal interaction between the executive or governing functions or higher functions of the brain, which are located in the frontal lobes, primarily the prefrontal lobes of the brain right behind your forehead, and the more emotional and instinctual centers of the brain, which are focused deep inside the brain in a structure that almost looks like a half moon called the limbic system. In fact, the word limbic comes from the origin of that term, that structure looks sort of like a half moon. It's sort of sickle shaped, and there's one in each hemisphere, but together they make up what we call the limbic system. And there's very generous interaction between the limbic system, our emotional or instinctual centers. For example, when we feel fear or anger, it's the limbic system which has become really activated. And normally the prefrontal lobes of the brain have a governing or overriding effect on the function of the limbic system. And so even though we may experience something that is in the moment upsetting, we can control our emotions, we can stay focused even when upsetting things are happening around us. And the dilemma for people with traumatic brain injuries is very often they've lost some of this governing ability, and so they easily trigger function of their limbic system and get emotional, you know, often panic responses or anxiety responses without the same ability to override that and calm the limbic system just with normal functioning of their prefrontal lobes.
And throughout the years, you have seen many people that are living with a traumatic brain injury. Have you observed any kind of common struggles and challenges that people have that already have lived for many years with a traumatic brain injury? And, you know, at the time of the impact, maybe an accident or so, when the traumatic brain injury occurred, it seemed pretty minor, but still years later, they're having a lot of challenges. Have you observed any common themes?
I have, and probably people who've had brain injuries, like I mentioned earlier, that were considered milder, where they didn't have a skull fracture. This isn't someone whose head has gone through the windshield of a car where they've been hospitalized for 6 months. These are often people who have had milder injuries, often just from a fall on an icy surface, even a severe whiplash injury where their head has been, shaken, or they've had some kind of head motion injury that was severe, where they actually haven't hit their head. They can end up with a concussion or a brain injury. A concussion is basically just a bruising of the brain. And what we see with that is often fairly soon after the injury, often within days, people begin to see a change in their behavior and daily functioning. And that's the thing that I've usually picked up on that often gets missed, is that just because someone hasn't had a skull fracture, we can't assume that they haven't had a significant brain injury. The kinds of things that we see happen is often there's a change in normal body habit patterns. For example, their sleep often gets really affected. Sometimes people have suddenly start experiencing severe insomnia or excessive sleepiness. They can have both. Other things that change, they can have a change in appetite. They can have a change in their mood in terms of their interest in doing things, Depression is a very common result of traumatic brain injuries, and sometimes it's fairly mild. And you can ask a person, do you feel really depressed? And they may say, well, not too much. But if you ask them more probing questions like, have you lost your interest in doing things that normally give you pleasure? They will often respond saying, yes, I've just lost my interest in life. I used to go out with my friends. I don't want to do that anymore. I had four or five hobbies that I had fun with, and I don't do any of them anymore. And I really don't have much interest in doing anything, so I spend a lot of time watching videos or just being on the computer. And you really find that their lives have sort of collapsed in on themselves. Other health problems that we will see can be, you know, manifold. I've just found that people are often end up struggling with many other health issues, often as a consequence to the traumatic brain injury. And one of the things we had just talked about before our interview is there was a fairly big study that just came out recently looking at people that had more severe kinds of brain injuries, wondering why their lives and health were so severely impacted, more than we would just expect from the brain injury itself. And it turned out in a subset of these people that the master gland of the body, which is sort of a grape-sized gland buried deep inside the brain, that affects all our glandular functioning, our thyroid function, in women our ovarian production of estrogen, in men testicular production of testosterone, the production of cortisol or cortisone, which is our main stress hormone. A lot of these things are controlled by the function of the pituitary gland. And so they found in a significant subset of these patients, they'd actually had pituitary gland injury that it was completely being overlooked. And so this is kind of raising more questions about how does traumatic brain injury affect the brain and all the structures in the brain, including the pituitary gland, that can end up causing such widespread changes in a person's health and in their overall functioning.
Mm-hmm. You also mentioned before that oftentimes people that deal with a traumatic brain injury end up withdrawing a lot because of their sensitivity to their environment. They end up staying more at home. Mm-hmm. And that can also cause problems if they're in a relationship because the partner might still want to learn something and go out there and do things. And then the person with the injury just withdraws more and more and just stays at home.
Yeah, that is certainly something we see. And, you know, some of it goes back to this interplay between the emotional and instinctual center of the brain, the limbic system, and these higher functioning brain centers in the prefrontal lobes of the brain. And when we lose some of that prefrontal lobe helpful override of limbic system function, people end up very sensitive to sound, to light, even to just obnoxious people, where normally they would be able to handle those things. Suddenly they find that many of these things just become intolerable. Even a loud conversation, a pleasant conversation, may just feel like someone's blasting stereo speakers in their ears. When in fact, if you'd taken them 10 years before their brain injury, they could have been in that exact same position, gone through that whole experience and felt perfectly fine afterwards. Now they have a really heightened sense of set of sensitivities that are part of their reality.
Yeah. What do you wish you would have known back then when you saw your first traumatic brain injury patients that you know now many years later?
Well, actually to have a very high level of suspicion for brain injuries that have been overlooked by other practitioners. And I think it's been very sobering for me over the years to have seen the number of patients who initially I've seen for problems with sleep or problems with depression, that when we actually get into their medical history, it turns out that the kind of seminal event or the turning point in their life, which was the start of this whole new medical problem, was in fact a traumatic brain injury. And the association between that and their current symptom really hasn't been made yet. And it makes me want to take those patients much more seriously and kind of look at all the different areas of their life that are being impacted by a brain injury. That this isn't just someone who's having a little trouble sleeping. They've had a brain injury and they're sleeping maybe something very hard to treat compared to the average person's. And you really have to keep that in mind. And plus, people with brain injuries will very often come in with a whole list of symptoms which are really crippling them, disabling them, and it would be easy for a medical practitioner to think the person's either kind of overplaying their symptoms and just being, quote, too sensitive, or that they're kind of overemphasizing things that have happened to them. And I really had to learn the hard way in meeting with a number of patients who'd had brain injuries that all these things are true that they're relaying, and you have to really work with them in a much more collaborative way, in a way of it looks at drawing all these kind of disparate pieces of their healthcare together and see the traumatic brain injury as the place where a lot of this stuff originated. And it makes sense. And for patients, it's a lot of relief because they suddenly realize, well, I wasn't crazy. This all really started right after my head injury. And it's, you know, if I was someone who had really bad pneumonia and was in the hospital for a week, I wouldn't expect myself to be out running marathons in 3 months. My lungs need time to recover. Well, it's a very similar thing. If you've had a brain injury, this may be something that affects you lifelong, or at the very least may affect you for a year or two significantly. So this has really raised my awareness, and I just wish somewhere in my training I had learned more about this.
Yes.
It's, again, that's part of why I call this an orphan disease. Mm-hmm. That it doesn't really easily fit into any one category. You know, even neurologists tend to focus more on the really severe traumatic brain injury people, where in primary care medicine, you know, where we're just taking care of regular folks with typical problems, very often people will kind of come in under the radar a little bit, and it's only by picking apart their medical history and realizing that their problems all started right after a potential head injury event that you can suddenly bring it all into focus.
Yeah, when you're dealing with an invisible injury like that, it's a very potent moment and very supportive when somebody says, oh, you're showing classical symptoms of somebody with a head injury, and the person knows, oh, I'm not crazy, and maybe it will help the person then to feel more compassion and understanding towards themselves.
Yeah. Well, and also to feel like they, you know, somehow there isn't some magical thing that they've overlooked, or it's a failure of character that they're not doing better than they are. In fact, one of the things I find is people with these kinds of brain injuries, and again, the more subtle ones, the milder ones that have gone overlooked, is very often they were very high-functioning people who have suddenly been faced with the fact that they're mostly disabled now. And they're having a lot of trouble just having any semblance of a normal life. But they don't have something to point to. They can't say, look at my missing leg. Of course I've got a disability. It's nothing that really shows. And they don't have a classical depression or often classical mental health issues where someone might even feel empathy about their own situation because, well, everybody in my family was depressed. It's not surprising I inherited some tendency toward depression. This was from an injury that no one really picked up before, and they're suddenly feeling like I failed, when really they have a kind of a logical consequence of a head injury.
Thank you very much, Dr. Peter. This ends part one of the interview. Next week you can look forward to part two, where we will discuss the benefits of meditation for people living with a traumatic brain injury or compromised nervous system. We will also shine light of whether there are benefits gained from living with such challenges. Further, we will look at in this time and age of computer or internet bombardment of our senses and the world being faster and busy and louder, is there a limit to what the nervous system and the brain can adapt to? Bye-bye.